Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
This is the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College, reporting on the White House. U.S. President Joe Biden and leaders from Canada, Latin America, and the Caribbean last week pledged to strengthen the Western Hemisphere's supply chains as Washington works to counter China and stem regional migration. Of note, who attended? Leaders from Barbados, Canada, Chile, Colombia, Costa Rica, the Dominican Republic, Ecuador, Peru, and Uruguay. And there were officials from Mexico and Panama. Professor, I read that list when it appeared last weekend, and I thought, is this comprehensive? There are a lot of missing countries here that are critical to the development of Latin America. How is this meeting understood in Washington? What does it mean that so many did not attend? Thank you.
Thank you, John. Well, the organization, the group, which is called the Americas Partnership, was something that was promised at the U.S.-hosted the Summit of the Americas back in 2022 in Los Angeles. The idea, this is, as we've seen the offering by the PRC and its companies to Latin America, the question always is, well, what are you, U.S., offering? And although that has been stalled for political reasons, legislative reasons, and in other reasons, really the idea of the Americas Partnership was intended to be something of the presentation of at least parts of the U.S. Counteroffer. To date, it's still largely aspirational, but we can see the movement in that direction. And yet also, if we look at the fact that you only had 11 of the 33 states of Latin America who even thought it was worth showing up for, as opposed to the vast number of global states that recently convened in China for the Belt and Road Forum, you can see that we have a long way to go. So in this, there was an agreement to focus on a series of tracks. There will be a foreign affairs track, a finance track, and a trade track. They will meet every 2 years at a leadership level. Costa Rica is actually going to hold the next one in 2025. They put forth a couple of really kind of symbolic starting points. So, for example, there is going to be an increase in capital of the Inter-American Development Bank for good, clean, transparent, environmentally sensitive projects. Separate from that, there has been a new funding mechanism in which the IDB is going to put forth a small number of grants that are going to foster development in the region. Again, about $89 million for starters. USAID, our development organization, which itself has a China-focused organization, among others, is putting out a small kind of seed money program, what they call an accelerator, to help train entrepreneurs in these high tech sectors in Latin America. There's going to be a pretty significant amount of money, maybe as much as $485 million, provided for countries dealing with migrants. And there's also talk in the future about doing things like setting up a fund for climate resilience and adapting to climate, as well as potentially funds for helping to train the digital workforce in Latin America in the future, especially in areas such as semiconductors, where certainly the United States would prefer those semiconductor operations, especially with sensitive chips, are located in the Western Hemisphere and not in places like the competitor China. So again, there was a lot of movement in productive direction in this, although it remains to be seen whether in terms of the number of states that participate in the actual appropriation by money by the U.S. Congress and other actors comes through as one hopes. But again, it's a move in a positive direction, although it was almost summarily overlooked in terms of media coverage and in attention by many parts of the region as events unfold in the Gaza Strip and elsewhere.
Professor, I read from a remark by the President of the United States at this meeting. We want to make sure that our closest neighbors know they have a real choice between debt-trap diplomacy and high-quality, transparent approaches to infrastructure and interdevelopment. I reward the president for telling the facts of the matter. However, that debt trap diplomacy, that seems to be something that the America's countries that I'm familiar with are aware of, and yet they go ahead anyway and deal with China. Why? Is there an explanation that is general, or is it specific to each polity?
Well, John, frankly, for me, having followed this for about 20 years, it's largely short-term thinking. When you're thinking about, getting access to the Chinese market of 1.4 billion people for your country, whether or not it actually makes sense that you have the ability to sell, your coffee or your fruit to China when they can easily buy similar products, closer from places like the Philippines and Vietnam, or when you're thinking about, how much money your company would make if you can just be the local partner to the big Chinese construction company that comes in. Those expectations of benefit oftentimes lead both members of corporations and politicians to silence the criticisms of China or do certain things to attract the Chinese. And so despite the fact that the U.S. can talk about, well, who ultimately benefits, Chinese coordination by the state, Chinese ability to coordinate between their companies, their ability to do some very sophisticated things in terms of structuring contracts with cross default clauses and clauses that the confidentiality clauses and questions of where things are arbitrated if you go to disputes. The Chinese are very adept at structuring contracts to their advantage, structuring relationships to their advantage to make sure that the Chinese get paid, even by populist nations like Venezuela that don't pay anybody else. And when you look at China's latitude to use, for example, corruption or personal benefits or play rough and loose with the rules in terms of labor or other violations, they have laws on the books, but they do a lot of these things. And at the end of the day, the question is the ability of Latin American countries with oftentimes weak institutions, imperfect transparency, vulnerability to corruption, difficulties in really effectively negotiating the interests of their people. It's set up to be at Latin America's disadvantage. These pharaonic projects that are built by Chinese companies look good. It lets Latin American leaders say, hey, look what we've delivered for you. But at the end of the day, when you realize how much money was lost in bribes, that the project itself didn't make sense. I mean, the case of the Coca-Cola Sinclair Dam in Ecuador, it was with so many structural defects and problems that it couldn't even be used at its full capacity after investing $2 billion of the Ecuadorian people's money. But by the time that these things that look good come to light, it's the politicians are long gone, and the people, as always happens in Latin America, are left to sort things out for themselves. And so it's a trap as much about the performance of Chinese companies and their ability to get most of the benefit for themselves, even though it sounds like a good offer. And so raising kids, like anything else where you're trying to train responsible decisions, it's always more difficult to do the right thing for your long-term benefit. And it's also always difficult to sell making sacrifices today to do the right thing. And so the U.S. finds itself in a very difficult position to sell this as opposed to the appealing Chinese offer to Latin America. But certainly through public diplomacy, through engagement, that's at least what we're trying to do. But it's a very difficult road that we're trying to go down.
One more detail of this meeting. Senior U.S. officials, this is Reuters, say they hope to reduce the numbers of migrants arriving at the Mexican border by expanding economic opportunities for people at home. And then they list six of the countries that attended: Costa Rica, Ecuador, Colombia, Peru, Chile, and Panama, as places that have, quote, offered legal status to millions of people displaced in the Western Hemisphere. Professor, you and I know that this is a partial of what's going on. Ecuador, I did the report over the weekend. The airport at Quito challenges no one who flies in. No one. Chinese nationals, Syrian nationals, Afghan nationals arriving walk immediately to a bus to the Colombia border. From the Colombia border, they take a bus to the edge of Colombia, cross the water into either Panama or Colombia, depending on how much they pay. walked the Darien Gap, were led by indigenous people and the cartels, and then take a bus from the Darien Gap's Pan American Highway to Costa Rica and onto the border. That is not about displaced by economic opportunities. And the administration is not being candid here. I know I sound like I'm complaining, but it is surprising to me to see the Reuters report written up with so little attention to the details that I have just presented.
Well, John, certainly at the previous Los Angeles summit, there was a commitment to do something about migration. And you're right. There's two different issues here. One of the issues is essentially burden sharing. And you're absolutely right. Important to recognize that, like many other places in the world, that the flows of migrants to U.S. borders, there were something like 2.4 million intercepts by Customs and Border Patrol last year, which was just above the previous year, which itself was also a record. But you have a combination of lack of economic opportunity in their own countries, rising insecurity and other frustrations and the draw of opportunities in the United States. And as also you point out, that has for different reasons, as the Cuban economy has collapsed, has pushed Cubans, as the Haitian economy has collapsed, has pushed Haitians, as Venezuela under authoritarian dictatorship and economic mismanagement has pushed over 7 million Venezuelans out of the country throughout all parts of the region. But the morass has been, on the one hand, who pays for the support relocation or finding opportunities for these migrants. Good for some countries who have incorporated migrants within their population. Colombia has done amazing things in terms of their generosity towards Venezuelans. Other countries, given their size, such as Costa Rica, have also taken impressive steps. But you're absolutely right that the broader question of how do you stem both the draw of migrants to the United States, where they perceive that if they take these risks, they can actually get in across the still relatively open U.S. borders and resettle them. Themselves and the much harder problem of how do you create sufficient economic opportunities and security situations where they feel that the better option is, and what they generally desire to do is stay in their own homes. And so to that extent, this is only a drop in the bucket of what has always been a very difficult problem of solving those root causes, as the administration would say, of migration flowing through the region.
Professor Avenelis and Ecuador. I mentioned Quito on purpose because it was part of the conversation in the White House. Ecuador has a new president, I understand, and it's a poor nation, I understand, and there's narco-terrorism, I understand. But if I had an accurate report last weekend, you walk through customs control at the Quito airport and walk into the Americas, no matter where you're from. I mentioned. We're going to Venezuela, the professor mentions. But first, we're going to stop in Argentina, where there's a horse race. Well, not really. There's a presidential contest, and the polls are changing. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.